local rides, no cross-country travelers. He doubles back to the exit before, which is smaller, a gas station, a convenience store, and one motel. I fill up his tank again, take his photo with my BlackBerry camera, and we shake goodbye. I take out another thanks for the Lyft card and hand it over. I know the kid won't regret picking me up on the long drive home, but I can imagine him thinking, what the hell just happened? Come back and go to California with me, I joke, and tell him if he ever needs to contact me to go through Atomic Books, where I receive mail without having to give out my personal address. I'm not sure why I just don't give out my business card. After all, he is my new best friend, the only Republican I'd ever vote for. Why on earth am I nervous to tell him where I live? We'll both remember this day forever, won't we? It's still only 4 o'clock. Plenty of daylight left. Why not keep going? I see a sign in the distance for a Days Inn, so if I ever get stuck here, at least there's a place to stay. I'm feeling cocky. The rest of this trip is going to be a piece of cake. I set up shop right between 2 gas stations, one with a food mart, the other with an advertised ATM machine inside, in St. Clairsville, Ohio, where the Corvette kid has left me. I figure most cars going by here are headed to the I-70 West entrance, that is, according to a sign I walked past, right up the hill. I couldn't see the ramp, but I have faith it is there, just waiting to welcome me west. Lots of cars come by, but none stop. One nice biker-type lady pulls out of the front gas station, rolls down her passenger window, and says, "Come on, honey, I'll take you up 2 exits," but I turn her down politely, explaining, "I am in a pretty well-set-up hitchhiking spot and would want to try and catch an interstate ride." But nobody stops. I amuse myself by watching these 2 gearhead guys in a pickup race back and forth between the gas stations. Why don't they just walk, I wonder? I fantasize all sorts of illegal scenarios, drugs, stolen car parts, but I guess their activities could be totally mundane. One is very cute, but neither ever makes eye contact with me, despite the fact that they practically have to run over me every time they drive back and forth. I imagine running off with them. By now, the evening rush hour is in full swing. All these cars headed to I-70 West, and no one is driving cross-country who wants an infamous companion? I've been standing here now for more than 2 hours. Has my roadside charm disappeared? A cop slowly drives by, looks me over, but keeps going. Phew, I remember that ridiculous song, Ohio, sung by Doris Day, but feel the opposite of its geographically proud lyrics. Why, oh, why can't I get out of Ohio? I want to sing out for the world to hear. Endless strings of traffic, no ride, no eye contact from drivers. All you need is one ride, I chant over and over, and suddenly, lo and behold, someone stops. I'm so excited I fumble picking up my bags and packing up my signs. I rush to the car and see the driver peering out through the rolled-down passenger window. He's not bad-looking. Maybe this will be a great ride. But just as I'm about to get in, he says, "Never mind, I'm not going that far," and pulls off. Well, why did you stop then? I want to scream after him. Rejected. I know it's been a long day, but do I look that bad? Soaked, then dried out? Old. I take it personally. Just when I couldn't feel much worse, the cop comes back, does a U-turn, pulls right over into the second gas station, and drives to the edge of the parking lot near where I am standing. "You can't hitchhike," he tells me after getting out of his vehicle. "But I'm writing a book about hitchhiking across America," I tell him. "I'm also a film director." This throws him, I can tell. He hasn't been expecting that answer, and I guess he believes me. He hesitates and finally says, "Okay, but don't stand in the actual road itself and never go down to the interstate." I agree to his terms, kind of surprised he's this lenient. It's getting late. Not dark yet, but still. I hope the only reason I got rides today wasn't just because it was raining and people felt sorry for me. I'm suddenly worried the one hotel I'm anywhere near might have no vacancies. I give up for the day. Sure, I'll have better luck bright and early tomorrow morning. I plod across a bridge that goes over I-70 and look west in optimistic but shaky confidence. These bags are kind of heavy, I realize, as I climb up, up, up a steep incline, seeing only the Days Inn sign, which was erected to be visible from the highway below. I notice a couple of giant trucks parked on the side of the incline. Rounding a bend and feeling like a weary and weak Elmer Gantry, I huff and puff to the parking lot and finally into the Days Inn lobby. Thank God they have a room. The lady at the desk doesn't blink when I tell her I have no vehicle. I walk to my motel-style room, past many trucks, some with their motors running. I'm too tired to think dirty. The room is actually fine. At least there's decent lighting, something many hotels, even fancy ones, neglect to consider. Not everybody fucks in the motel room. Some people read. For the first time today, I check my emails. Good God, hundreds. That's what you get when you ignore your business. I go through and only read personal ones. Even though it is after office hours, I call my assistants at home to check in, something that will have to continue through the trip and I know gets on their nerves. But I can only talk to you right now, I explain. I can't read emails standing by the side of the road in that sunlight, and I certainly can't be doing business inside a car when I'm trying to talk my way to San Francisco. Susan and Trish seem to understand and are relieved I'm somewhere safe for the first night at least. I'm surprised to realize Days Inn has no room service. I'm not being a snob here, but I thought I could at least get a hamburger or some sort of crummy pizza. But no, only complimentary breakfast between 6:30 and 9 a.m. I go back out into the lobby to see if there are any dinner alternatives, but the local takeout menus for restaurants that will deliver here seem too depressing. Nosing around, always looking for inspiration, I see there is a bar in the motel, a big one with a disco ball. Only one couple is inside, but it looks kind of amazing. A set from a low-budget Convoy meets a Stayin' Alive sequel. On any other night, I'd be in there in a Baltimore second making friends. But tonight, I'll pass. Hitchhiking with a hangover would be unthinkable. I'm not hungry anymore anyway. I go back to my room and get out my map and realize I'm only 300 miles from my house in Baltimore. It's going to be a long trip. I eat a little bit of the trail mix I brought with me, some of which has spilled out into the bottom of my still damp bag. I feel like a homeless hamster. It's the end of day one. I guess if you're this tired, you can sleep anywhere. Nighty-night. Real ride number six. Cop. I wake up early, day two, that I'm actually going to walk outside this motel room and stick out my thumb again seems even more shocking to me now that I'm past the point of no return. I peek through the curtains and see it's not raining outside, but it is incredibly foggy. Great. My fear of multiple car and truck pileups on the highway accelerates. I throw away my first pair of worn underwear and leave a $5 tip for the maid, wondering if such gratuities are even customary at the Days Inn. I go into the breakfast room for my complimentary meal, hoping some cross-country driver will see me and offer me a ride. But no, it's a hideously lit area with a TV blaring. The six or seven grizzled men inside don't make eye contact with one another, much less me. They look stunned by the grim routine of their lives. I feel the unfriendly vibes immediately, and with one look at the pitiful breakfast choices this place offers, white bread, packaged donuts, not even instant bad scrambled eggs or microwaved greasy bacon, I lose my appetite. Instead, I gulp down a cup of tea and immediately go to the bathroom and try and pee again, still filled with future lack of facility concerns. I check out of the motel quickly. Nobody makes small talk. Alone in the dense fog, I walk down the big hill in nervous silence toward my same hitchhiking spot from yesterday. It is scary foggy. I mean the kind where they could shut down the interstate. A truck or two pass me by, leaving the motel, and I hold my sign up, but I'm afraid with zero visibility that they'll actually run over me. I march back onto the overpass that crosses I-70 West and look off into the pea soup and hope against hope that today will be easier. But it's not. Same spot, same deal. Lots of cars, no one stops. I wonder if I should walk up the hill to where the real I-70 entrance ramp is. Nah, probably nowhere to pull over there. Besides, it's engulfed in even thicker fog. Better stay here. All it takes is one car. But that one car doesn't stop. I stand here for hours. The fog finally starts to burn off, and it gets hot. I put down my sign and apply sunblock, which I'm always afraid will look like bird shit if I smear it on without looking in a mirror to see if it's rubbed in thoroughly. I put on my scum-of-the-earth baseball hat to protect my bald spot. No one will recognize me now, but that's better than sun poisoning. I slip on my sunglasses, too. Now I really look like a Looney Tune. A different cop drives by and gives me the eye, but doesn't stop. I'm surprised. I see one of the cute gearheads from yesterday in his pickup truck pull into the gas station. He's still racing around, hopping in his truck, peeling out to drive the short distance to the other gas station. What on earth is he doing? He must have seen me by now, too. I've been hitchhiking out front of where he works for 2 days, but he still resists any greeting. I'm so bored and frustrated, I pretend I have a crush on him in an inappropriate Jane Bowles kind of way. It's getting to be lunchtime. I've got to do something. This is definitely not working. Then I see somebody walk up towards me on the shoulder of the road. Oh no, not another hitchhiker, I fear. Hey, buddy, I was here first, I imagine arguing, remembering those 1960s hippie turf hitchhiking wars that always erupted in either New Haven, Connecticut or Santa Barbara, California, two hot spots for interstate ride begging. As he gets closer, I realize he is a real homeless person. He passes me by and says hello, the first local who has actually spoken to me since I was dropped off in this godforsaken town. I say hi back. Giving up here, I finally tread up the hill, and when I get to the top, I see the problem. Yes, the entrance ramp to I-70 West is here, and it has an okay place to stand, but the real reason no one was stopping is almost none of the traffic is turning onto the interstate. I've been standing on a big local road leading to a large shopping center and a lot of the town's businesses and retail locations, so nobody's been going my way. They were just going to the mall, fuckers. I stand in my new spot, figuring now I'll get a ride. Not sure why I think that. Same tiny percentage of cars swerves off into I-70 West. The same cop comes cruising back, and I see him eyeing me, but he keeps going. It's getting really hot. I don't have much water left. I see a woman who looks straight out of one of my movies walking up the hill towards me. Again, I pray it's not another hitchhiker. She looks mean, too, like maybe a hooker. But this hardly looks like a sex hotspot to me. She passes me by. Maybe she's just going to work. Why do you have to turn everybody into a tawdry character, I chastise myself. The ball of hell, known as the sun, is rising fast and is now almost directly overhead. I could pass out. I notice one tiny area of shade across the street on somebody's property. Whoever lives in that house above couldn't see me if I sat there for a moment just to rest my weary bones, could they? I plod over to the shady spot of grass and sit down. I don't look at my BlackBerry messages. It's a world too far away. Instead, I call my office and whine to my assistants. They are patient, even though I know they'd like to yell, "We told you not to do it, fool," but instead offer the encouragement that someone will come along. Yeah, but suppose they don't, I argue, and then realizing they couldn't possibly have an answer to that question, we hang up. I just sit there. The first gnat I feel on my skin gets me back on my feet. I go back to my across-the-street spot, but still nobody stops. St. Clairsville, Ohio, I hate you. I guzzle my last drops of water and decide I've got to walk back down the hill and get some supplies. I can live on trail mix alone, but I do need liquids. Maybe I can talk someone in the first gas station convenience store into either giving me a ride or letting me pay to be taken to a better area with more cross-country drivers. I pass the second gas station with the gearhead. He doesn't look up, but he's still there, so our possible affair is not totally out of the question, I guess. I go into the convenience store in the first gas station and buy water. Now that Coke distributes Evian, I am always pleasantly surprised to find it available in places like this. The guy behind the counter sees my hitchhiking sign. He must have noticed me out front, too, and doesn't look away. I ask him if there's a better rest area down the road, and he says, yeah, there's a truck stop about a half hour away, and I inquire pitifully, know anyone I could pay to drive me there? Silence for a second. Yeah, me, he answers, when I get off work at 2 o'clock. How much, I demand, all perked up and instantly relieved. After giving it a moment's thought, he says $20. Deal, I answer, thinking to myself I would have said okay if he'd asked for $100. I'll go back out and hitchhike, and if I'm still there when your shift ends, let's do it, I negotiate. Okay, he agrees, and I feel optimistic. Otherwise, I might have to ask him for a job. I feel like I live here already. Back in my first hitchhiking spot between the two gas stations, I feel as if I'm in Groundhog Day. I hope the gearhead doesn't think I'm stalking him. Same old story, lots of cars, no rides. Then I see the same cop coming back down the hill, only this time he pulls right over to me. I can't tell if he's a mean cop or not. He asks me for ID. I show him my license and explain I'm writing a book on hitchhiking. He doesn't show his hand, but goes back to his vehicle and calls in my info. Satisfied there's no warrant against me, he comes back and gives me my license. I explain that an officer told me yesterday in this exact same spot that I could hitchhike here if I didn't stand on the road. "Oh, yeah," he answers. "What'd he look like?" "A blonde," I answer, conjuring up idealized Tom of Finland visions. I figure now may be the time for my fame kit, so I take it out, tell him I'm a film director, drop the H word, hairspray, and offer him a look. He silently reads my whole bio, film director, writer, actor, etc., and then he looks up at me and says with a straight face, "It doesn't say anything here about you being a professional hitchhiker." I laugh. He does too. "You could give me a ride," I suggest brazenly. "Okay," he says. "I will." I can't believe it. I get in the cage in the back, and it's the exact opposite experience of what I imagined in the worst chapter. This time, I wish he would put on the siren, but I keep my mouth shut as we peel out. I quickly forget the guy in the convenience store I had hired to give me a ride. Oh, well, I told him if I didn't get a ride. Besides, I just saved myself $20. "I can only take you to the end of my county," the officer explains. "This is a sheriff's police car, not a state trooper's. And in Ohio, each county has sheriff cop cars that do all the work, even though state troopers have all the power." Just as I'm thinking how relieved I am not to be with those lazy state troopers, he offers to call ahead and see if I can find another officer to take you further into Ohio. "The exit I'm thinking of is okay," he advises. "It's got a filling station and restaurant. But the second one, outside of my county, is a truck stop with a hotel, and it's bigger and probably better for getting a ride. Either all of the other cops think he's crazy, or they are busy because my protector and real-life peace officer can't find any fellow sheriffs to help me out. Sorry, I'll have to drop you off at the first one," he says, as he exits I-70 West and pulls into a giant travel plaza that also is a diesel truck stop located next door to a McDonald's. We are only 7 miles from where he picked me up, and I am so grateful. Maybe I could stay and be his deputy, and we could hang out in cop bars after work and get drunk together, I fantasize. "You should have luck here," he says cheerfully. Lots of cars enter and exit on these ramps. He waves to the lone gas station attendant and highway workman entering the fast food restaurant, obviously familiar with the locals. "I'll come back and check on you," he says as I get out. "And if I find another officer who can take you to the next truck stop, I'll have him come get you." Wow, public service at its finest. I suddenly like Ohio again. Real ride number 7, male nurse. I go into McDonald's. People look up at me, I hope in recognition, but I can't be sure. Maybe it's just because I look like an unidentified flying oddball. What to order? I decide on the plainest thing I see on the overhead menu, a quarter pounder. It's not bad. At least I've finally eaten something. I try making eye contact with the diners seated around me, but nobody seems to want to chat, even though my hitchhiking sign is in full view, and you'd think that might be a conversation piece. Not here. I go outside and stroll through the trucker gas station, hoping someone will see my sign. If they do, it doesn't help. I walk up the lonely highway toward the entrance ramp. I pass a lot displaying sample chicken coops with a sign directing interested buyers where to call. Will I have to sleep in one tonight? The entrance ramp is a good one, with plenty of space for a driver to pull over before the high-speed merge onto Route 70 West. I stick out my thumb once again. It's very hot. Lots of bikers are on the road because it's maybe the first summery-type weather of the year. They always give me the thumbs-up sign when they see me hitchhiking, and I return the gesture. Once again, I'm stuck. Nobody stops. I stand here for 4 more hours. What the fuck am I going to do? Maybe no one will ever pick me up. Susan texts me, "Are you okay? Looks like you're still in the same place." No, I'm not okay, I think. I can tell I'm getting dehydrated. I see a non-chain, local diner-type joint back where I was, across the street from McDonald's. Maybe I'd better take a break, stroll over there to get some shade and see if any friendly drivers are inside. I walk past those now even more threatening chicken coops. I can't help myself. I pick out one just in case that has to be my lodging for the night. I go into the diner and I'm disappointed to see it's almost empty. Lunch hour is long over, so I blatantly ask the table of guys sitting together if they're going my way. They politely say no. Then I order a large Coke, something I would never do. I haven't had a Coca-Cola in 20 years, but but I'm about to faint, and when I was a kid, my mom always used to give us Coke if we were feeling queasy. The waitress eyes me a little suspiciously, but maybe I'm just being paranoid. I use the bathroom like any other paying customer, and think of that rude TMZ segment I saw where they tailed Larry David and Jeff Garlin into a gas station, and when Jeff Garlin exited the men's room, the reporter had the nerve to ask him if it was number one or number two. Just number one for me, especially here. When I return, the waitress delivers my order, and I ask her if she knows anyone I could pay to take me down the road to that bigger truck stop that the cop had told me about. She doesn't know anyone. Sigh. I drink the giant Coca-Cola, and it hits the spot. Any calories I get here have to be canceled by the anxiety of this godforsaken day. I leave a 50-cent tip on a dollar check and feel like a fool. I go back out in the heat and once again plod my way back up to the entrance ramp. Again, no one stops. Then I see a cop car pull over. But instead of feeling paranoid, I am praying, once again, that it will be my mythical cop from the next county who was originally contacted by the first cop and is now free to give me a ride. But no, it's the first cop. You still didn't get a ride, he marvels. I am mortified. It's mostly local traffic I offer as a flimsy excuse. Well, shake your sign or something, he advises with exasperation. I feel like such a loser, a lazy hitchhiker who can't even hustle a ride properly. He waves goodbye and heads back in the opposite direction from where I'm going. I'm amazed I never imagined waiting this long in any of my worst ride chapters. I have been hitchhiking today for about 9 hours and have been inside a car for less than 10 minutes, and it's only day two. I will never get to San Francisco. Then it happens, as always, when you least expect it. A ride. I bet a cheer goes up in my office when they see by the spot tracking device that I finally get a lift. Any driver who picks up a hitchhiker wants to talk, and today I'm especially willing to listen. He's a lovely guy in his 30s, working class, with a girlfriend at home. He immediately tells me his life-changing tale of how his grandmother, after a long illness, had to have her legs amputated, and how he was so greatly impressed by the care she got in the hospital that he wanted to take up nursing for a living. Good, he can nurse me. He had been divorced and said he got a lot of tattoos to punish himself, but was now better. He has a kid of his own and more children with his new girlfriend, of whom he speaks kindly. He isn't going far, he explains. He has just gotten carry out at the same McDonald's where I had lunch to take home for dinner to his family. I ask him about that truck stop down the road I had heard about, and he explains that it has recently gone out of business. All that is open there now is a trucker gas station. My heart sinks. I guess the cop didn't know that. I tell the kindly and not unbutch nurse what I do for a living, but in a nice way, he doesn't seem much interested. I explain my fear of being dropped off so late in the day at an exit without a motel. He says, after I eat dinner, I'll drive back down to this freeway exit and check on you to see if you got a ride. Wow, what a great offer. But what exactly is the offer? If I'm still standing here, do I get to go to his house, meet the little woman, and sleep on the couch? Do I get to nibble on his family's leftover McDonald's dinner? I guess I'm a little less worried when my male nurse pulls off the interstate to let me off. Of course, I give him my thank you card. Maybe he will come back if I'm stuck. Grasping at straws is beginning to feel normal. Real ride number 8. Coal miner. Just as I feared, there is no lodging at this exit. Up the street from where I'm standing, partially hidden by tree branches, is a gas station, and from the sign I can see, I gather some sort of convenience stores inside. But how late this place stays open, I have no idea. To the right, past a bridge I could sleep under if I had to, I glimpse in the distance giant trucks pulling away after refueling. Visible further, up on the other side of the freeway, is the sign for the now-defunct Trucker Plaza, the one place I could have spent the night, if it had been open. But it isn't, John. It isn't. The only cars that seem to be on the road here are rush-hour types, and they pass with the usual indifference. I sadly realize I'm at an even worse place to thumb a ride than I was when I was last picked up. But at least it's a different worse place. I stand there with my thumb out forever. I'm dying here. I call my office and vent my fears. Susan and Trish don't know what to do or how to help because I can't even give them my location. I don't know where the hell I am myself. My BlackBerry and Spot tracker can tell them a fairly close geographical position, but not exact. I beg them to find a local car company phone number, just in case I'm stuck here in the dark. Susan and Trish can hear the panic in my voice when I realize the workday is ending and they'll soon be leaving the office. They promise me they'll try. We hang up, and I can see the sun is quickly going down. Terror. I realize I need a new sign that is way more direct, one that could work for local rides and at least get me to an exit with a motel. But I am afraid to leave my hitchhiking spot to search for cardboard, because suppose the male nurse comes back. What time was he eating dinner anyway? He must be finished by now. Was he lying about returning? Did he look up my name on his home computer and suddenly get cold feet? No, megalomaniac. He probably threw away your card, you self-important shithead. I want him to come back right now. But he doesn't. I realize I must act, or it will be total nightfall. I walk over to the gas station convenience store and ask the woman behind the counter if I could have some cardboard to make a sign. You know it's illegal to hitchhike on the freeway, she sniffs. Bitch. Yes, I know, but I'm on an entrance ramp, and the Ohio police have already told me that was okay, I answer with suppressed haughtiness. In that shed outside to the left of the store is where all the empty boxes are kept, she offers with a hint of class condescension. You'll have to break them down. I begrudgingly thank her and wonder if she'll call the cops when I leave. Inside the hot shed, I grab a few boxes, all too large, and rip them apart with my hands in my usual clumsy at physical labor kind of way. Ow! I scrape my hand on a staple, and now I'm bleeding. Once again, I wonder, why can't I do the simple physical things most other men can do easily? Am I that gay? So queer I can't flatten a cardboard box properly without ripping it in the middle and making it impossible to be used as a potential sign? Finally, I find a smaller box, and miracle of miracles, the seams flatten properly, and I tear off two sides that are the perfect size. I take out my trusty marker and start to scrawl my new plea, next motel, but hesitate, wondering if that message will somehow sound sexual. Instead, I write next hotel, which is ridiculous. Certainly, there are no real hotels anywhere near these freeway exits, but what the hell? I'd rather sound highfalutin than cheap. Guess what? The sign works. A coal miner picks me up. A real one. Mid-30s, covered in coal dust like in a comic strip, coming home from work. And yes, he'll take me to an exit in Cambridge, Ohio, where there are motels. It's only 10 minutes away from where he picked me up. Old Wilmington, Ohio, he tells me. But at least I don't have to sleep outside. Yay! I don't even bother telling him what I do for a living, and he doesn't ask. Not the nosy type, I guess. Just a good guy helping out a fellow man down on his luck. I ask him about that Chilean coal miner disaster and how it was for him to watch that harrowing rescue news footage, and he said he purposely never looked at it because I have three little girls and have to go to work in the coal mines here anyway, so why upset myself? He's had a pass, just like most of the men who picked me up hitchhiking so far. He had gone north from this part of Ohio because it was dull, but became a meth addict before turning his life around and coming back home. Just like the male nurse and the biker before him, the coal miner speaks lovingly about his wife. Usually at home, I meet straight guys who bitch about their spouses and complain about the lack of blowjobs they get. But here is another heterosexual man who does love women and gives his wife great credit for steering him in the right direction. He seems happy. Heterosexuals can feel good about themselves, too. Even though Cambridge, Ohio is past his exit, he takes me there anyway and even checks out the entrance ramp for my tomorrow morning's hitchhiking. It looks good. He asked me which of the several motels we could see I'd like to stay in. I am already a Days Inn man, so I choose what I know. I give him my thanks for the lift card, and he takes it politely. He bids me farewell with a smile and pulls off towards home after an honest day's work. Real ride number 9. Here we go, magic. I check in and lo and behold, the clerk recognizes me. I tell him I'm hitchhiking cross country and writing a book and how hard it is to get a ride. I see him Googling me at the same time he's taking my credit card info. A fat man waiting to check in behind me overhears and says, I used to be a trucker, and there's a lot of truckers who stay at this exit, so you ought to have luck. I tell him truckers can never pick up hitchhikers these days because of all the restrictive new rules, but he says without missing a beat, "Well, believe me, they'd pick you up if you had a vagina." I go to my room, and as soon as I enter, the phone is ringing. It's the clerk. "Can you come down and do an autograph?" he asks. "Sure," I respond, "as long as you try and hustle me a ride west tomorrow morning." As I sign at the desk, he assures me he'll ask around and leave me a note in the morning if he's had any luck before his shift ends. I have hope. I go back upstairs and text Susan and Trish at their homes that a nice coal miner in the outfit gave me an 8-mile ride to a Days Inn. I explain about the clerk in the lobby, how he might find me a ride, etc. Susan emails me back, "Tomorrow will be better." I see by checking the day's emails that my office tried earlier, without any luck, to find me a taxi or car service when I was whining and panicking. I read the email incorrectly in my usual impatient way and assume when they write that they even called a local VFW bar and tried to talk to a sober enough person to act as a hack, that they were setting up a fake ride to pick me up. I write them a blowhard email back saying, "This makes me insane. Please do not do this." But then I realize they weren't trying to manipulate my story, just doing what I had asked, find me a paid ride to a hotel if I get stuck. I write back with my tail between my legs, "I see this was preventative planning. Thanks." I continue scrolling down on my phone and read that the Corvette kid emailed me at Atomic Books the very night he left me off. The owner, Ben Ray, doesn't know about my hitchhiking trip, so is baffled. He forwards the kid's day-old initial email to my office, which explains how he picked me up in Frederick County, Maryland, and drove me to Ohio. What a great time we had, and then asks Atomic Books for my email address so he can offer to give me a lift again on his upcoming trip to Missouri. Not having any idea what the kid was referring to, Ben sent back the standard line to fans who emailed there, "I'm sorry, we only accept mail for John Waters," and gave him the address. But the kid wasn't having any of that and answered, "Okay, he did say to reach him by emailing him there. If this isn't true and he lied to me, so be it. But I spent 4 hours driving him to Ohio today. All I'm asking is for you to forward the email to him so I can touch base." Susan had seen this forwarded email at work and answered politely, explaining to the kid the situation with Atomic Books and adding, "Thank you for driving John yesterday. He told us it was a great ride and he really appreciated it. He's checking in with us very infrequently, but we'll be sure he sees your email and thank you for extending such a nice offer. I think he'll be beyond Missouri in a few days, but it sure is generous to offer a backup plan." The kid answered quickly, thanking her and joking about my having told him one of my assistants was also a Republican. "Glad to hear of a fellow R. Hopefully John doesn't give you too much grief for that." He doesn't seem put off by Susan's poo-pooing the possibility of his coming back to get me. "What a great adventure," the kid writes her back. I immediately email him my cell phone number. You never know. I feel a little more upbeat, and for the first time on the trip, I am starved. I walk outside into the hub of motels, fast food restaurants, even a giant tractor supply warehouse. Truckers are everywhere, and yes, a few of them are incredibly cute. But in real unporn life, most of them are, well, ugly, just like film directors, I guess. Here is a world I have never been in my life. I feel excited. I go in a Starfire convenience store and buy more water. Then I head over to Ruby Tuesday for dinner. Another first for me. I sit at the counter and try to appear friendly to the other trucker types who are also eating, but nobody takes the bait. I order a tilapia, and it's actually delicious. I like Ruby Tuesday, I decide, feeling that I'm almost passing for a normal person. Maybe regular people don't talk to strangers. Maybe that's why I've made no friends here. I walk back to the motel and make sure the clerk sees me again. He waves. I'm disappointed he doesn't mention anything about a ride tomorrow, but I decide I can't be a nag. Maybe he's still working on it. Up in my room, I look at my AAA triptych and get depressed. I hitchhiked about 10 hours today, but was only in cars for a total of about 50 minutes. Day 2 has been awful. I have a long, long way to go. I escape to sleep. I wake up at 6 a.m. as usual. Thank God Days Inn has bathtubs. Showers are too violent for me unless it's really hot outside. I debate throwing away my second pair of underpants. Nope, this trip's definitely going to take longer than 5 days. I wear my second day's boxers again. I realize I have forgotten one of the main tools of my mustache maintenance, the cuticle scissors I use to trim unruly long or gray hairs. Oh well, for now it's not that scraggly. It'll pass for the day. I go to work. It's not a far walk to the entrance ramp, and it looks like an okay spot. Lots of traffic. But Susan was wrong. It isn't better tomorrow. I stand there with my thumb out. The cop from yesterday would be proud. I shake my sign and make eye contact with drivers, but still no luck. Cop cars pass me several times, and I know they see me, but none of them gives me any grief. 4 hours pass. I try different signs. End of 70 West, the one Susan suggested, writing hitchhiking book. Even just San Francisco, but still strike out. Ohio will be the death of me yet. Death by tedium. Again, when a ride stops, there is a split second of unreality. Fear they'll take off without me. It's a van pulling a small trailer. The door slides open and I see a whole gang of hipsters. It's the Manson family, I humorously greet them. Each is staring at me in amazement. Where are you coming from? A handsome guy asks from the second row of seats. Baltimore, I answer. Get in, sir, he says, and I see the friendliest group of smiles I've ever seen break out on all their faces. They are an indie band called Here We Go Magic, which I stupidly and unhiply have not heard of. So much for thinking I am up to date on new music. Driving is the sound guy, Matt Littlejohn. Next to him is drummer Peter Hale. Next row, Mike Block, the guitar player who first greeted me, and Avtar Khulsa, the on-road tour manager. Next to me in the second row of seats is the sexy and cool Jen Turner, bass player, and behind in the last row, lead singer and guitar player Luke Temple. All their musical equipment is in the trailer being pulled behind us. They are headed to a gig in Bloomington, Indiana, and offer to drive me to Indianapolis. Yay, a long ride! I am thrilled, no, exhilarated, to be in a van with such a hip group. It only takes one ride, was becoming truer and truer each day. They explained that they passed me once as they entered the freeway but didn't stop. Arguing back and forth if it really was John Waters, some were sure, others were not, so they decided to come back and see. He'd never wear that hat, Peter had argued. I guess he never saw the Scum of the Earth movie. I struggle to fasten my seatbelt and quickly bond with Jen, who has full-tilt bad girl beauty and style to burn. Mike and Avtar, seated in front of us, quickly join in on comparing sexual slang words, blouse, a gay man who is a feminine top, transsexual, gay for political reasons, and heteroflexible, mostly straight but known to occasionally fall off the wagon. Luke just listens silently from the last row, softly strumming his guitar, as Peter and Matt shout out other rude vocabulary lessons from the front of the van. We talk about endless touring. They have been on the road for almost 2 years straight. Drugs, Patty Hearst, Divine, and their own hitchhiking adventures from their past. This is complete heaven for me. Great new showbiz comrades who drive safely, and we are covering a lot of miles. We stop for lunch at Giacomo's in Zanesville, Ohio, and I treat. It's the least I could do, a sugar daddy road warrior. Ha! It is fun to be part of a youth gang again. Not wanting to lose time, they have a show to make that night after all, we head back onto Route 70 and eat as we travel. I think I surprised them by pulling out my hitchhiking music compilation CD I had prepared when writing the best and worst chapters of my book. I mean, what other hitchhiker brings his personal soundtrack with him? They laugh and seem to love all my vintage novelty and country songs about being lonely on the road, and in turn they give me their new CD, A Different Ship, which totally coincidentally just came out this week. I can't wait to listen to it in private. Mike asks if they can tweet that they have picked me up, and I say sure. My rule has always been I would never start the publicity or confirm I was hitchhiking until after I was done, but whoever picked me up could do as they liked. Mike tweets on the Here We Go Magic official site, just picked up John Waters hitchhiking in the middle of Ohio. No joke, Waters in the car. Jen follows up with her own announcement. We really picked up John Waters hitchhiking. Both include a snapshot of me, with Jen happily riding along in the van and Luke relaxing in the back seat. Proof. The story goes viral almost immediately. Twitter, Facebook. Pinky Swear was one of the first reactions to Mike. It is 100% Pinky Swear true, he answers happily. Spin Magazine immediately calls the band's manager, and the rest of the music press quickly follows. I can see by Mike's shocked face as he checks his emails on his computer that the shit is hitting the publicity fan in a completely unplanned, lovely, and insane way. I have been with Here We Go Magic for about 6 hours now, and as we enter the suburbs of Indianapolis, where the band has to go south, they try to find a good drop-off spot for me, one with hotels and restaurants. I can tell that as much as they want to help me find the perfect hitchhiking spot, they will be late for their show if they dawdle. We leave I-70 West, and I say this exit will be fine, even though I can see it isn't. A high-speed, heavily traveled main highway with an entrance ramp to I-70 West would be impossible to pull over on. But the band members have been so wonderful to me that I don't want to hold them up. It's time to say goodbye. We stop at a convenience store parking lot and get out. I ask a stranger to take a photo of all of us together, with me in the middle holding my end of I-70 West cardboard sign. Here We Go Magic drives off into their show business life, and I go back to being a bum. Real Ride Number 10, Chaute. La Quinta Inn has a room. Already stewing about the impossible morning hitchhiking spot I am facing, I confide in the lady who is checking me in. She doesn't raise an eyebrow when I tell her I'm thumbing my way across the country and points out back behind the property where Route 70 West itself runs quite near the property. You could climb over the fence, she suggests. The room's okay. Not as nice as Days Inn, though, and the lighting is piss poor for reading. Suddenly I realize I've lost my reading glasses. Oh, God, I bet I left them in the Here We Go Magic van. I email Jen immediately. Luckily, I have my backup pair for exactly this occasion. Otherwise, I'd be unable to read a thing, a torture worse than death. I check my emails and see the Here We Go Magic story has crossed over even more. First a site called Deceased, then Gawker, quickly followed by Jill Rosen of the Baltimore Sun. Gulp. My office's official response to all inquiries has been, "We neither confirm nor deny this story," which I realize sounds a little grand. Jen has been especially sweet in her more recent tweets, not revealing where they had dropped me off. Maybe the wild blue yonder. She even has sent me a farewell message. JW, be safe out there. The band emails me back, yes, they have my glasses. And a friend who is at their show, who is based in Indianapolis from Joyful Noise Recordings, will bring them back to my hotel tonight after their gig and drop them off at the desk. Talk about a ride that keeps on giving. I look out the window of my room, and indeed I have a perfect hellish view of Route 70 West rush hour traffic. The whizzing sounds of cars and trucks are starting to feel like the soundtrack of my new life. Climbing over the fence would be a ridiculously extreme act, plus I'd be right on I-70 West where no one would stop. I go outside and walk through the suburban shopping-type area, and know I'm too near the city. I try walking up to where the nearest ramp is, but see, this would be a terrible place. Nowhere to stand, endless traffic, mostly all local. I panic. What the hell am I going to do? Yesterday, Susan had suggested I call Chaute Marsh, who once booked my This Filthy World spoken word show for the Indianapolis Museum of Contemporary Art. Maybe she could give me a lift to a better hitch spot. At first, I dismissed this idea with bluster. No, that would be cheating, I raved, still the fake ride reactionary. But once I got back in my room, I was suddenly a little more open to cheating. After all, wasn't I going to offer a stranger money to get me to a better spot in Ohio? Is it that different to call a friend? Well, actually, yes. It would be sort of cheating. But what the hell? Hadn't I mentioned in the prologue that I would call a limousine if I had to? It's not that bad. Chaute is surprised to hear from me out of the blue, and I imagine even more startled to hear that I am in her town hitchhiking and needing a ride in the morning. She doesn't balk when I mention I like to start early. Not having the nerve to give her my usual starting time of 6:30 a.m., I sheepishly mention 7 a.m. She seems fine with that, but adds she has to take her two kids to school, so they'll be in the car. Great, I say. Children need to know about hitchhiking. I tell Chaute I'll be out in front of the motel waiting eagerly for her arrival. What an absolute sweetheart. I email my office that Chaute is good to go, and they are relieved. Trish stays late after work hours, though, and comes up with some good possible locations to be dropped off in the morning. She emails directions and descriptions of the areas to both me and Chaute. One has a McDonald's and a truck center and is about 15 miles west. and the other is a rest area 10 miles farther that has no restaurants but vending machines and bathrooms and separate parking lots for cars and trucks. I feel better. I email both my sisters that the hitch story has gone public and they should be ready to explain to our mom and calm her down if she should hear. I tell them I am in Indianapolis and I'm fine. I guess I'm hungry. By now I have eliminated successfully and feel relieved to be able to do so on the road. Let's see, where shall I fine dine tonight? I see the usual chain outlets to ignore. The Outback Steakhouse. Looks less corporate than the others, plus I've never heard of it. I'm doing new stuff every day. I enter and sit at the bar and a nice waiter takes my order. I choose a steak. The fillet is kind of gristly, certainly nothing to write home about. Nobody looks at me or talks to me, despite the fact that two men are on either side of me, also eating alone. They stare at the overhead TV as if they have never not eaten a meal in their lives in front of the tube. I tip more than 20%, remembering Nora Ephron's great line that over-tipping only costs a few dollars more. Here, less than a dollar. Back in the hotel room online, I see the Here We Go Magic story is continuing to get an unbelievably high number of hits. I'm secretly pleased, even though I can't for the life of me think how this could possibly make it easier for me to get rides. I forward the spin website on Here We Go Magic, picking me up to the Corvette kid and tell him where I am. He emails me back. Okay, sounds good. I plan to head west in a few days. I hope you don't go too far now. Does this mean there's really a possibility he'll be back? As I curl up to go to sleep, I realize day three started out terribly, but ended on the upswing. Could my newfound hitchhiking luck last into the next day? How could I possibly get a cooler ride than with Here We Go Magic? I wake up and I'm still shocked I am doing this trip. When I hear a message on my voicemail from an old friend who has read online about me hitchhiking, I'm touched, but have to chuckle that he's seriously concerned that I have dementia and I'm wandering around the highways lost and out of my skull. He offers to come pick me up no matter where I may be, even though he lives in Los Angeles. I text him back, I'm okay. I check my email and see even Baltimore local TV and radio stations are now reporting my hitchhiking. I email my sisters and tell them they'd better tell our mom now. She will definitely hear today. I'm still too frightened over the possible length of this trip to throw away any underwear, but at least I put on a fresh pair, plus a clean Gap t-shirt, pink. What was I thinking when I packed? I'm getting a little sick of wearing the same Izzy Miyake sports coat every day. Usually I'd be more like the Donna Dasher character in Female Trouble sniffing. I really should be changing my outfit anyway. I've had it on for nearly 5 hours. But refrain from acting like her when I, by habit, go down to the free breakfast room. The food selection is just as awful as always. White bread, frozen bagels a starving-to-death New Yorker would still turn down, and sugar-coated high-calorie cereal. Same trucker types, same uncuteness, same gloomy lack of social interaction. God, I miss newspapers. Luckily, I swiped a Wall Street Journal from that lunch place yesterday in Ohio, so I have something to read while I fight the awful fear that Chate won't show up. Actually, I know she will be here, but I'm a worrywart and always need a backup plan, like crying. I check out at the front desk, and I'm thrilled to see that the friend of Here We Go Magic did actually drop off my reading glasses. Another kind soul. Chate's early, and so am I. Her two kids, Vivian and Max, in the back seat are adorable and stare at me with friendly but quizzical expressions as I climb in the front. I can't imagine how their mom has prepped them for this preschool adventure, but she's done a good job. Chate's game to take me to either of Trisha's recommended hitchhiking spots, but imagines the second one will be better. Always taking the word of the local, I'm sure she's right, and relieved she has the time to take me the extra miles. I offer her gas money, but she laughs and turns me down kindly. The first exit on South Holt Road looks so ominous I tell her not to even bother pulling off to scout. Still inner city and industrial, the exact opposite of a place a cross-country traveler would stop for services. We continue on to the further rest area, and I see we are finally out of Indianapolis. She exits, and I'm unsure because there are so few cars, but it's a pretty setting. Woods, nice bathrooms, a separate truck parking lot I can see in the distance. Few travelers compared with the entrance ramp, but I get the feeling everybody who stops here is going a long way. I get out at the end of the rest area right where all the trucks and cars would have to re-enter I-70 West. It is a beautiful, even slightly chilly morning. Holding my hitchhiking sign, I pose with Shawtay's two great kids, and we all give her the thumbs up for the picture. I hug her and thank her so much for disrupting her life on such quick notice. Boy, does she deserve the hitchhiking thanks card I hand over with gratitude. They jump back in the car, and right as they pull up beside me to leave, Shawtay takes, through the passenger side window, a final photo of me hitchhiking. Bye, Shawtay. Bye, kids. Once again, I'm on my own. Real ride number 11, Vietnam vet. I stand there. It's quiet for once, actually cold. I put on my wool scarf for the first time. The sun coming up causes a big glare, and when the first one or two vehicles exit the lot, I see the drivers have to squint and lower their visors to see it all. Not even sure they can actually see me hitchhiking. So I move back into the shade, closer, inside the rest area. It's odd having vehicles drive by at such a slow speed. There are few cars. I realize this is the kind of rest area where late at night it would be scary. No security, no services, except maybe blowjobs inside as I had imagined in an earlier bad chapter. But this time it would be robbers, not cops, shaking down the frisky perverts. Here in the day, it feels safe, though. Couples stop to walk their dogs. Even a few truckers pulling out throw up their hands to signal they would pick me up if they could. I stand there feeling both foolish and brave. Silence except for the birds. I'm alive, I think, and so many of my friends are not. I may be nuts to be doing this, but I'm kind of proud of myself. I am having an adventure. I like my life, even if I have to stand here for the rest of it. But I don't. The next ride is yet another nice guy, nondescript vehicle. He's 66 years old, just like me, but hetero, I'm sure. A Republican, he tells me, who was happy Obama came out for gay marriage because before, when he said he was evolving on the issue, that was bullshit. He's also a Vietnam vet with a Kentucky-type accent, and I never once feel uncomfortable with him. Here is yet another straight guy who can't stop praising his wife, bragging proudly how she loves to read and how smart she is. I tell him what I do for a living, and he shows no real surprise, just says how happy his daughter would be to hear he picked me up because she loved Hairspray. He starts telling me about his career, providing feed for farm animals, and how the business has come a long way on healthy nutrition for cattle and pigs. I learn that baby pigs love M&Ms as a treat, and if you feed one in a litter that snack, the baby pig will follow you around every time you appear. Chickens, however, are a whole different story. They're the worst. All their feeds laced with growth hormones. That's why 8-year-old girls get their period now, he explains, from eating these chickens that are more science projects than animals. Now there's a sobering thought. I eat chicken. I hope I don't get man tits. He takes me deep into Indiana, and I feel so safe and happy. After about 2 hours, I realize he's going to be turning off Route 70 West, so I ask him if he knows a good rest area similar to the one he picked me up at this morning. We start scouting and immediately see a sign for one coming up soon. I know he is actually driving further west than this, but who knows what the entrance ramp will be like when he has to merge south onto his new route. I ask him if he'll pull off now to inspect hitchhiking spots. The rest stop looks good. A pretty park, enough cars stop. Even a few truckers mixed in, presumably taking naps. Bingo, I'll take it. I give him my thanks for the lift card, and he chuckles and bids me farewell. I'm on a roll. Next. Real ride number 12, trucker. I stand there for a while. I check more Google alerts and see the Here We Go Magic story is going absolutely batshit, yet I have never felt more anonymous. Drivers leaving in cars politely nod or make hand signals that they aren't going far. I try to remain positive. I see a Hispanic woman with a bunch of kids in the park taking a break from driving. She keeps looking at me, and I think, wonderful, she's going to give me a ride. But when she walks over to me at the beginning of the exit ramp, I see she is holding out something in her hand for me. Please take this, she says with an accent, and I'm stunned to see what I think is a $10 bill. No, really, thank you so much, I plead. I don't need it. I'm writing a book. Yeah, sure.